an attack on a trillion plus in student debt.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm Mark Garrison in for David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. President Obama is expected to take action this morning on exploding student debt. Marketplace's David Gura joins us from Washington to explain. Good morning, David.
Hey, Mark.
So what's in the president's plan?
Well, the cornerstone of the plan is this expansion of something called income-based repayments. And basically, your monthly payment would be capped at 10% of what you make, 10% of your income. This is a program that's already been around, but so far it's only been available to recent graduates. I should say it's been very popular. And what President Obama wants to do is make more borrowers eligible for it, Mark, potentially up to 5 million more of them.
And part of this plan involves working with companies, with the private sector. Explain that.
That's right. I mean, it's expected President Obama is going to ask the Secretary of Education to work with them, these companies that service these federal loans, to negotiate terms that are more favorable. He also wants to work with companies that help us prepare our taxes. And the goal there is to make sure Americans know what tax credits are out there and that programs like that income-based repayment program I mentioned are out there, that they exist.
Now, today is an executive order, basically the president doing his own thing. But what could he do if he got Congress on board as far as expanding this?
I talked to Kevin Carey about this. He directs the New America Foundation's education program, and he says that, in the past, student debt has attracted bipartisan support.
Whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, you certainly have constituents who are very worried about the cost of college and very worried about their ability to pay their student loans back.
So there's this bill in the Senate by Elizabeth Warren that would give borrowers the ability to refinance their student loans, borrowers who have federal loans and private ones. The CBO estimates that would cost about $60 billion over the next decade, though, Mark. So that's caused Republicans to balk at that so far.
Okay, we'll see what happens. Marketplace's David Gura, thank you.
Thank you.
Here is another number, $48 million. That was the box office take for the number one movie, The Fault in Our Stars. It's based on a popular young adult novel about teen lovers who meet in a cancer support group. Hollywood has long been obsessed with drawing young men, but the profitable weekend audience for The Fault in Our Stars, more than 80% female. Conrad Wilson reports on Hollywood's new audience obsession.
Hollywood's found another new way to make money.
Like they looked under a rock and they found this great big core audience that they didn't know was there, which is young women.
Sharon Waxman is CEO of The Wrap, which covers the business of Hollywood. She says movie studios are doing fewer films that rely on broad appeal, especially to men. Instead, she says, studios want a stronger following with smaller slices of the audience. In this case, young women.
Katniss Everdeen, District 12.
Don't forget that when you do that, you're driving all kinds of other engagement. They come back, they'll see the movie more than once, they'll buy the DVD. If they ever do a theme park ride around it, they'll go to that too.
Movies based on books keep appearing because Hollywood is making a lot of money. Catherine Arnold is an independent film producer.
They're realizing that they can have more confidence to actually go ahead and make these kinds of movies for young girls because they're proving themselves at the box office.
Arnold says, well, this may seem like a feel-good Hollywood moment. This trend will only last as long as ticket sales keep coming in. I'm Conrad Wilson for Marketplace.
The World Cup starts Thursday, so we're going to tell the story of how technology changes business through the making of a soccer ball. We often talk of how fast technology moves, but in manufacturing, technological change can actually be surprisingly slow. How and why it spreads is something of a mystery, but Marketplace's Sabri Benishour has this rare look inside the process, from an Ivy League school to a Pakistani factory to your kid's soccer field.
This is the sound of soccer balls being made by a guy named Mohammed Irfnana in Sialkot, Pakistan.
My primary job is to cut hexagon and pentagon pieces.
About 40% of the world's soccer balls are made there, and a bunch of economists thought it would be a great test tube for studying how innovation spreads.
So we went to Sialkot.
Eric Verhoeven is a professor at Columbia's School of International and Public Affairs. He introduced a really cheap technological innovation. It was basically just a tool to cut shapes from the fake leather in a less wasteful way.
And so we're talking about something like 12% increase in profits from adopting this.
He got the idea watching YouTube videos of Chinese factories who compete with Pakistani factories.
Industrial espionage via YouTube.
Anyway, he gave it to a bunch of factories and waited to see how fast this great new innovation spread.
After about 15 months, we had six firms out of 135 in town that were using our technology, which seems slow.
Why would a factory just leave cheap, money-saving technology on the table?
I told the owner that it's not going to work.
Workers didn't like it.
For us cutters, this means lower daily wages.
They get paid by the piece, so initially, as they learned the new equipment, they'd be slower and make less. The workers' interests and the factories weren't in sync.
You always have to share with the workers.
Hal Serkin is a senior partner at Boston Consulting Group.
It can be a small amount, but they need to benefit as well. Otherwise, you'll have even more resistance to the change and it won't work.
When workers were given bonuses to learn the new technology, a lot more factories adopted it. This isn't just a problem for factories or for developing countries. Robert Gibbons teaches at MIT's Sloan School.
Some conflict of interest is a conspicuous and ongoing feature of essentially all organizations.
Senior employees might block a new software because younger workers would be better at it. Bankers paid by the loan might take more risks than their managers prefer. And not all conflicts of interest can be resolved with a simple bonus. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
Something you might have washed your face with this morning is now illegal. Illinois is the first state to ban microbeads, tiny plastic particles found in many facial scrubs and exfoliants. They're so small, sewage systems can't filter them out, so they end up polluting rivers and lakes. Sunday, Illinois' governor signed into a law, a measure to phase them out. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison. This is the Marketplace Midday Update. This is APM, American Public Media.